Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, January 6th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, Champaign Schools Talking Swap. Many questions remain ahead of this week's two listening sessions from Champaign. On the Friday before the Unit 4 School Board's December meeting, the staff at Garden Hills Academy was called into a five-minute stand-up meeting with Superintendent Susan Zola. The staff had no idea what was coming. Zola's proposal was a radical one, which she told the News Gazette 3 weeks later was one of several options designed to address a number of issues the district is facing. The desire for its popular bilingual school, International Prep Academy, to become a K-8 program, overcrowding at middle schools, and the low number of families that choose to attend Garden Hills Academy. The plan was for IPA and Garden Hills to swap locations. IPA would take over the large building in the North Champaign neighborhood, which has 227 open seats this year, and the current Garden Hills staff, along with most of its students, would head to the building on Kirby Avenue, where IPA is now housed. The current IPA building is one of the district's oldest, but is due to receive upwards of $6 million in renovations as part of the six-school 2016 referendum. "It kind of hit our staff like a ton of bricks," said Jacqueline Douglas, a social worker at Garden Hills. "We didn't know what she wanted to meet with us about, and then when this came up, it was like, where did that come from? It seemed out of left field." If Zola viewed this as the beginning of a long discussion, which she has since said she does, many Garden Hills staff members didn't seem to get that impression. "It very much seemed like this was the choice," third-year teacher Diana Hildebrand said, "and either we're going to do it or we're not going to do it, but we're probably going to do it, and you can just come along for the ride." The plan was to be proposed to the school board at the next Monday's meeting. According to the two teachers and two social workers who spoke with the News Gazette, the staff's impression was that a decision would need to be made by the January board meeting. If the plan was approved, they'd be moving into their new digs this summer to be ready for the fall. Whether the proposal winds up becoming reality or not, it's ignited conversations about diversity, Unit 4's school of choice policy, and what to do about Garden Hills, which is underchosen according to the district and underperforming according to the statistics kept by the Illinois State Board of Education. It made sense for Zola to consult Minnie Person before the plan was addressed. The Champaign County NAACP president taught under Zola at Dr. Howard Elementary, and as a leader in the local African American community, she's deeply concerned with the well-being of a school whose student population is 63% Black. Pearson admits she wasn't in the clearest of headspaces when she received a call from Zola a week before the board meeting because she was returning from a funeral. But to Pearson, Zola didn't seem to make the district's proposal clear, and Pearson's misunderstanding of the situation is telling. She said, "These are some of the things that I want you to know that we're going to discuss," Pearson said. "One of those would be to give the kids in Garden Hills a little more diversity. I kind of took that as they were going to open it up and make sure that Garden Hills was something where parents would want to send their children there and redirect some white children or some Asian children. I had no idea that she was going to talk about swapping IPA and Garden Hills at the board meeting. I didn't get it. I didn't comprehend." Pearson went to the board meeting to specifically address the lack of progress since a court-ordered consent decree was signed in January 2002, which involved eliminating any unwarranted disparities in access and achievement for African American students. Pearson looked for information regarding Garden Hills on the board meeting's agenda, but she didn't find anything. In fact, she would have had to scroll down and click on a note labeled Meeting Facility and Programming Needs to find information on the district's plans. The PowerPoint slides linked in the agenda proposed two questions: whether the swap would reduce minority group isolation, and whether it would help Garden Hills' problem of being underchosen. The district school of choice policy ranks parent choice high among the considerations when deciding which school a student will attend. Garden Hill, Zola said at the board meeting, has become chronically underchosen when the deadline passes for the first wave of registration. Because of that, seats are left unfilled until the summer, when the children of parents who registered late are funneled into the school. The school's magnet status gives it academic resources to compete for students, and its building, staff members agree, is one of the best in the district after a $13 million renovation in 2010. Instead, the neighborhood's reputation for crime and violence, which some residents argue is underserved, is often a reason given as to why the school doesn't top more parents' lists. For Garden Hills Academy, which has a population that is 87% low income, a swap could theoretically make it a more desirable school, and a more diverse one as a result. IPA, whose population is 60% low income, would then take its place. Because a student's residence is weighed in the school of choice calculations, the swap could give future kids from the Garden Hills neighborhood preference at IPA. The Kirby campus, meanwhile, would get an infusion of money for renovations. How much it would receive beyond the $6 million allotted in the original referendum is up in the air. Unit 4 spokesman John Lady said the district has been able to find funds for other referendum projects that have gone over budget by refinancing bonds. The district put forward several renovation plans for the current IPA campus, which were not specifically designed with a swap in mind, that range from $6 million to $25 million. The staff of whichever school occupies the Kirby Avenue building would have input as to how that money is spent. To renovate it into a building that could support a K-8 school for IPA would cost $35 to $37 million. For Garden Hills teachers who love the building they're in, which has been tailored and modified to their specific magnet program over the years, a new home is little consolation. And for most of the current Garden Hills students, the benefits would be virtually non-existent, critics of the proposal say. Only bilingual students can transfer to IPA after the first grade, and renovations on the Kirby building wouldn't be complete for a few years. In addition, the switch would create a longer commute for many current Garden Hills students. Out of the 425, 180 live within a mile and a half of their current building, while only 47% live within the distance of IPA's building on Kirby. Pearson was aghast and livid when conversation about the school swap was broached at the board meeting. "It's clearly racist," she said later. 2 days later, Zola met with the NAACP and ACLU, along with other concerned parties, to hear their concerns. The superintendent will also host two listening sessions about the proposal at 5:30 p.m. Tuesday at Garden Hills and 6 p.m. Thursday at IPA. It was said Friday night that Unit 4 made the decision because these people are powerless. They're not very vocal. They had never been notified. Oh yeah, you may have tried to let the key players know, but it was short notice. Various ideas were broached in that Friday meeting. Pearson said volunteers and aides could fill various needs. A parent who works at the University of Illinois said college students would be eager to help the school, help it improve issues related to discipline and academics. Perhaps most importantly, Pearson said she thinks teachers needed long-term training specifically to teach the population they're educating. Just because African American children are not achieving doesn't mean that they are bad teachers out there. But in all honesty, we need educated, qualified teachers who understand cultural diversity. You could be top of your class, but if you teach in a public school where there are more black children than you've ever seen in your whole life, and you just don't know how to deal with their behavior, their language, their mannerisms, their playfulness with each other, it's going to be foreign to you. In the Garden Hills neighborhood, reactions to the proposed swap vary. Champaign City Council member Clarissa Foreman, whose district includes Garden Hills, is skeptical. Neighborhood Association President Chad Smith said he sees the possibility of adding a popular program to the area as a likely benefit, and he doesn't think the argument should be framed in racial terms. Taking a long-term view, social worker Amy Dean said she thinks the pros might outweigh the cons. I feel like Garden Hills Academy is kind of constantly put in a no-win situation, just with the way things have worked out with the schools of choice, with the community's perception of my school, with the reactions that I get from people when I tell them where I work, said Dean, who is in her seventh year at Garden Hills, making her one of the longest tenured staff members. There's definitely a negative perception that we're trying to change, but it's difficult to combat that. When I look at the pros of the situation, I think they outweigh the hardships that will come with it. It will be difficult to make this transition. It will be inconvenient to be living in construction for another couple of years. The enrollment could be really low, but over time, I think this could be positive. Some, though, view it as a solution that doesn't directly address or fix the problems. I think that Dr. Zola is trying to solve problems, Hildebrand said. We all have situations that we need to solve, and education is not an easy place to live, and people aren't going to get everything, so she's trying to figure out the best way to do what everybody needs. She's got 18 balls in the air, and she's trying to figure out how to catch 5 of them. And unfortunately, we're going to be the one that's dropped, and it just seems like we're always the ball that's dropped. For its part, the school board as a whole didn't enthusiastically accept the proposal. Gianna Baker said she wouldn't even consider voting for the move because she didn't see the benefits for Garden Hill students. A few others were tepid, while some were open to the idea. Because of the number of strong rebukes, Pearson does not seem to expect the proposal to pass. And although she said the district needs to earn back her trust, she's confident they can move past it and address the problems that she sees are at hand. This can be a learning experience for us all if we admit that there are things that we want to do, but we don't do them well. That we all need help. In Illinois, apprenticeships are on the rise. Apprenticeship programs in construction and other trades have long been seen as a pathway to good-paying jobs without the expense of a college degree. A new study suggests they also rival the performance of state colleges and universities in terms of training hours, graduation rates, diversity, and lifetime earnings for graduates. The report from the Illinois Economic Policy Institute and the Project for Middle Class Renewal at the University of Illinois specifically singles out Illinois' joint labor management construction apprenticeship programs as a model that could be duplicated in other industries with high demand for skilled workers such as IT, nursing, or manufacturing. The apprenticeships offer a path to the middle class with access to jobs that pay $40 an hour, said Frank Manzo, policy director for the Illinois Economic Policy Institute. For many young residents, vocational training may offer a better pathway to a stable job than college. The report, The Apprenticeship Alternative, uses data from the U.S. Department of Labor to compare outcomes for apprenticeship programs with Illinois community colleges and four-year universities. Joint labor management apprenticeship programs have graduation rates of 54%, compared with about 66% for community colleges and 61% for Illinois public universities. The average starting wage for apprenticeship graduates is $19.15, about the same for those from community colleges and slightly less than the $26 for those with four-year degrees. But the average career wage is $40.40 higher than either of the other two categories, and lifetime earnings exceed $2 million, nearly equal to four-year programs. Construction apprentices spend more than 7,300 hours in training, on par with four-year bachelor's programs. Apprenticeships are the bachelor's degrees of the construction industry. They are a great alternative for Illinois youth. They offer workers pathways into middle-class trades that are in high demand. Because of that, we need to remove the stigma of choosing a trade school or college by expanding pre-apprenticeship programs in public high schools and colleges and by educating students, parents, teachers, and counselors about them. The authors also called on the state to promote a new apprenticeship education tax credit that Governor Pritzker signed into law in August. Senate Bill 1591 offers employers a tax credit of up to $3,500 to cover educational expenses for each qualifying apprentice, and up to $5,000 for those in underserved areas. This is an exciting new opportunity for employers to dive into the apprenticeship model. Currently, more than 85% of all apprentices in Illinois are in the construction sector, and 97% of them are enrolled in programs administered jointly by labor unions and their contractors. The authors argue that that is the most effective model, as the programs are cooperatively administered and fully funded, with wages negotiated as part of the union contract. For every hour worked by an employee, a small amount is invested in an apprenticeship program to train the next generation. The industry also has employer-only programs administered by companies or trade associations, but they rely on voluntary contributions from contractors who often have an incentive to forego long-term workforce training investments to keep costs down so they can win project bids. Apprenticeship programs have expanded considerably in Illinois in recent years. In 2018, the state had about 16,000 participants, up 34% since 2011. Even as enrollment growth has slowed at many public universities in Illinois and across the country. They offer a cost-effective alternative to public universities where tuition costs have risen as state funding has declined, said U of I professor Robert Bruno, the study's co-author and director of the Project for Middle Class Renewal. Apprentices pay minimal costs and don't accumulate debt. At the same time, Illinois and other states are investing millions of dollars to upgrade bridges, roads, and schools, providing job opportunities and incentives for people to go into the trades with an 8-year economic expansion and the new $45 billion Rebuild Illinois program, demand continues to grow. Jarrett Clem, business manager for International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Local 601 in Champaign, said 13 local trade unions offer apprenticeship programs that run from 3 to 5 years. Education is free for the workers who repay it over their career through the per-hour contribution to train future generations. You're paying for the next guy behind you. Apprentices are paid to work alongside a journeyman, getting raises as they learn more skills. During the school year, they usually go to classes 1 or 2 nights a week. The IBEW program takes in 12 to 18 new apprentices each year, depending on how much work construction work there is, with a total of 65 currently in the program. We're definitely building up our numbers. I think pretty much all the trades are. Apprenticeship schools funded by unions and contractors would amount to the 6th or 7th largest educational institution in Illinois, all privately funded. It's done without any cost to the taxpayer. It's millions of dollars invested directly into nothing but education and training. Research has shown that the model is applicable to other occupations, giving workers a chance to acquire more skills and access to better paying jobs. It's used in Las Vegas to train hotel and casino employees, and service workers in Chicago have teamed up with managers of condos and hotels to create an apprenticeship program where employees can move from janitorial work into higher-skilled positions such as mechanics. In Champaign County, Parkland College and local school districts have been moving to reinvigorate career and technical education and beef up pre-apprenticeship programs that introduce students to various trades. Pre-apprenticeship programs offer a bridge to help high school graduates learn the math, science, writing, and problem-solving skills they need to be admitted to apprenticeships. They also give students a credential to use when they're interviewing for an apprenticeship position, said Bobby Schultz, Parkland's Dean of Career and Technical Education. One program at Parkland and other community colleges funded by the Illinois Department of Transportation prepares students for careers in highway construction in cooperation with local unions. Parkland is also expanding partnerships with industry to provide new apprenticeship programs in manufacturing and information technology. Parkland provides the classes, employers pay for the students' instructional costs, and students earn an entry-level wage on the job where they are mentored by more seasoned employees. Once they complete the program, they get an industry-recognized credential, from a job certification to an associate degree. Parkland is taking part in a program funded by a $400,000 federal grant to the Illinois Community College System to use the ICATT apprenticeship model, industry consortium for advanced technical training, for high-tech manufacturers and companies with complex logistics. A project of the German-American Chamber of Commerce of the Midwest, it's based on the German dual education system of training students to work in specific industries. So far, three companies have signed up. Another new federal grant will fund a program to develop IT apprenticeships in programming, networking, and cybersecurity. Employers who participate will receive $2,000 for each employee they sponsor. Parkland received $332,000 over 4 years for the program. The college recently approved a Google IT pre-apprenticeship program designed to prepare students for entry-level jobs in IT support. They will learn a Google-issued industry credential as well as a Parkland certificate. Parkland provides training in automotive technology for Ford employees and is developing apprenticeships in land surveying and pesticide application, working with the agricultural interests and the Illinois Association of Land Surveyors. Parkland is working on agreements with local unions that would allow apprentices to get college credit for part of their training and ultimately earn a certificate or associate's degree in electronics or another trade. Students might take 15 credits in a particular discipline and 15 general education courses during their apprenticeship, so by the time they're done as a journeyman, they have 30 credits toward their associate's degree. They want their folks to get an associate's degree. The United States has primarily used the union model for apprenticeships, which works well, but other models can work too. If you want to do this and you're not a union shop, you can still develop it. Manzo said partnerships between colleges and employers are important, and the German ICATT model is worth exploring to improve opportunities for students in community colleges who aren't headed for construction jobs. Joint labor management programs aren't a panacea, but the report shows they're a good model that has worked in Illinois and elsewhere and could offer a roadmap to improve the pool of skilled labor in other industries. The U.S. Department of Labor has identified hundreds of occupations in growing industries that could benefit, including healthcare, IT, veterinary medicine, and transportation. With a strong economy and record low unemployment, employers are looking for ways to get the workers they need. And in a related article, women minorities making gains in apprenticeships. Historically, most apprenticeships have been concentrated in male-dominated industries, where women and minorities weren't always welcomed. But U.S. Department of Labor data show that graduates increasingly reflect the racial diversity of Illinois, according to a new report by the Illinois Economic Policy Institute and the U of I's Project for Middle Class Renewal. Women made up 3.7% of graduates from joint labor management construction apprenticeships in 2017, and 12% of those in other fields, far below the 50% or more at colleges and universities. But the 9% of graduates were African American, and 11% were Latino, similar to rates for the state's public universities, 10 and 12% respectively. The change has been driven by several factors, including government pressure to diversify the programs dating back to the Carter administration. Many minimum wage jobs are disproportionately filled by women and minorities who see apprenticeships as an attractive option, especially as college costs continue to rise. There's been a real effort made within the trades to be more appealing to a diverse and inclusive workforce. Across the state, apprenticeship programs have reached out to community colleges, high school counselors, and others to recruit applicants from diverse backgrounds. Local unions also worked with United Way and AFL-CIO to produce a booklet outlining the different trades and apprenticeship programs. In the past, we didn't do a good job of going through the community. The only people who knew we existed were sons and daughters of workers. We've tried to reach out and say this is a great opportunity. You'll have insurance, you'll have a pension, and a living wage. While the percentage of women in the trades remains low, what we now know is when they get there, they're very likely to graduate with completion rates exceeding their male counterparts. A growing number of female plumbers, carpenters, and laborers are now instructors in apprenticeships, giving female students a symbol of what that can be achieved. The report called on the state to expand access to childcare, a barrier to female participation, and urged apprenticeship programs to hire more minority instructors and develop mentoring programs for students from disadvantaged backgrounds. Ensuring a workplace free of discrimination is also important. Instructors, staff, and apprentices now go through programs on preventing sexual discrimination and creating a welcoming, inclusive workplace, something that was not true when I started this work over 2 decades ago. There's a lot still to be achieved, but we've seen a real evolution. Next up, fan uptick from Champaign. Don't be surprised if this month's Illini Northwestern basketball showdown at 15,000-seat State Farm Center outdraws November's Illini Wildcats football game at 60,000-seat Memorial Stadium. Despite an improved product in year four of the Lovie Smith era, turnstile attendance figures obtained by the News Gazette show there's still plenty of work to do in convincing Illini football fans to show up on Saturdays. Exhibit A, the November 30th regular season finale, held 2 days after Thanksgiving and 2 days before students resumed classes after the holiday break. The attendance figure you saw in the official Northwestern Illinois recaps, 35,895, based on the number of tickets distributed, was more than 3 times the size of the actual turnstile count, 11,800. Hosting Northwestern in November has historically been a tough sell. In Smith's second season at Illinois, just 11,000 fans passed through the turnstiles on November 25th, when the 23rd-ranked Wildcats handed the Illini their 10th loss of the fall, 42-7. Of 27 home games in Smith's 4 seasons, only one other drew an actual crowd of fewer than 15,000, 14,071 for a 63-0 drubbing by Iowa in 2018's Memorial Stadium finale. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, January 6th. Please stay tuned.